Chapter 10, Real Estate Closings Pre-Closing Procedures. Buyer's requirements to close. Both the buyers and their lenders must be sure that the seller can deliver the title that was promised in the purchase agreement and that the property is now in essentially the same condition it was in when the buyers and the sellers agreed to the sale. This involves inspecting the title evidence, the seller's deed, any documents demonstrating the removal of undesired liens and encumbrances, the survey, the results of any required inspections, such as termite or structural inspections, or required repairs, and any leases if tenants reside on the premises. Final property inspection. In the real estate contract, the buyer usually reserves the right to make a final inspection, often referred to as a walkthrough, shortly before the closing takes place. Accompanied by the licensee, the buyer verifies that necessary repairs have been made, that the property has been well maintained, that all fixtures are in place, and that no unauthorized removal or alteration of any part of the improvements has taken place. It is not an opportunity to reopen negotiations. Spot survey. A spot survey provides information about the exact location and size of the property boundaries, as well as the location of all the improvements on the property. The spot survey will reveal any encroachments and easements. The sales contract specifies who will pay for the survey. Typically, the survey indicates the location of all buildings, driveways, fences, and other improvements located on the premises. Seller's requirements to close. Naturally, the seller's main interest is to receive payment for the property. Sellers want to be sure that the buyer has obtained the necessary financing, has sufficient funds to complete the sale, are certain that they have complied with all the buyer's requirements. Title procedures. Both the buyer and the buyer's lender will want assurance that the seller's title complies with the requirements of the sales contract, seller's title insurance policy, with the buyer named as beneficiary. Additionally, lenders require title insurance in the event any clouds on the title, encumbrances on the real estate, or claims on the title should come up during the course of ownership. Lenders or buyer's title insurance policy, with the lender named as beneficiary. As a first step toward a new owner's title policy, prior to closing and establishment of the new owner's title, the seller usually is required to produce a current abstract of title or title commitment from the title insurance company. When an abstract of title is used, the purchaser's attorney examines it and issues an opinion of title. This opinion, like the title commitment, is a statement of the status of the seller's title. It discloses all liens, encumbrances, easements, conditions, or restrictions that appear on the record and to which the seller's title is subject. On the date when the sale is actually completed, the date of delivery of the deed, the buyer has a title commitment or an abstract that was issued several days or weeks before the closing. For this reason, there usually are two searches of the public records. The first shows the status of the seller's title on the date of the first search. Usually, the seller pays for this search. The second search, known as a bring down, is made after the closing to bring the title search down to the day of closing. Affidavit of title. As part of this later search, the seller may be required to execute an affidavit of title. This is a sworn statement in which the seller assures the title insurance company and the buyer that there have been no judgments, bankruptcies, or divorces involving the seller since the date of the first title examination. The affidavit promises that no unrecorded deeds or contracts have been made, no repairs or improvements have gone unpaid, and no defects in the title have arisen that the seller knows of. The affidavit gives the title insurance company the right to sue the seller if his statements in the affidavit are incorrect. In 2010, the Title Insurance Act was amended by prohibiting title insurance companies, title insurance agents, or independent escrowees from making disbursements out of a fiduciary trust account in connection with any escrows, settlements, or closings unless the funds are collected or are good funds. This applies to $50,000 or less from any single party to a transaction, or an aggregate amount of $50,000 or greater received from any single party to a transaction. Good funds are in one of the following forms. Lawful money of the United States. Wired funds unconditionally held by the title insurance company, the title insurance agent, or independent escrowee. Cashier's checks, certified checks, bank money orders, official bank checks, or teller's checks drawn on or issued by a financial institution chartered under the laws of any state of the United States, and unconditionally held by the title insurance company, title insurance agent, or independent escrowee. A personal check or checks in an aggregate amount not exceeding $5,000 per closing, provided that the title insurance company, title insurance agent, or independent escrowee has reasonable grounds to believe that sufficient funds are available for withdrawal in the account upon which the check is drawn at the time of disbursement. A check drawn on the trust account of any lawyer or real estate broker licensed under the laws of any state, provided that the title insurance company, title insurance agent, or independent escrowee has reasonable grounds to believe that sufficient funds are available for withdrawal in the account upon which the check is drawn at the time of disbursement. A check issued by Illinois or the United States. A check drawn on the fiduciary trust account of a title insurance company or title insurance agent, provided that the title insurance company, title insurance agent, or independent escrowee has reasonable grounds to believe that sufficient funds are available for withdrawal in the account upon which the check is drawn at the time of disbursement. Collected funds means funds deposited, finally settled, and credited to the title insurance company, title insurance agent, or independent escrowees. Fiduciary trust account. Whether the purchaser pays cash or obtains a new loan to purchase the property, the seller's existing loan is paid in full and satisfied on record. The exact amount required to pay the existing loan is provided in a current payoff statement from the lender, effective on the date of closing. Closing procedures. Face-to-face closing. Face-to-face closings may be held at a number of locations, including the offices of the title company, the lending institution, an attorney for one of the parties, the broker, the county recorder, or the escrow company. Those attending a closing may include the buyer or the buyer's duly authorized agent, the seller or the seller's duly authorized agent, the real estate licensees, both the buyer's and the seller's agents, the seller's and the buyer's attorneys, representatives of the lending institutions involved with the buyer's new mortgage loan, the buyer's assumption of the seller's existing loan, or the seller's payoff of an existing loan, and a representative of the title insurance company closing agent or closing officer. A closing agent may be a representative of the title company, the lender, the real estate broker, or the buyer's or seller's attorney. Some title companies and law firms employ paralegal assistants who conduct closings for their firms. The closing agent orders and reviews the title insurance policy or title certificate, surveys, property insurance policies, and other items. After reviewing the agreement of sale, purchase agreement, the agent prepares a closing statement indicating the division of income and expenses between the parties. Finally, the time and place of closing must be arranged. The exchange. When the parties are satisfied that everything is in order, the exchange is made. The seller delivers the signed deed to the buyer, who in return provides the seller with the funds from the buyer's loan and the buyer's down payment. All pertinent documents are then recorded in the correct order to ensure continuity of title. The buyer's new mortgage or deed of trust must be recorded after the deed, because the buyer cannot pledge the property as security for the loan until he owns it. Closing in escrow, non-face-to-face closing. An escrow is a method of non-face-to-face closing in which a disinterested third party is authorized to act as escrow agent and to coordinate the closing activities. The escrow agent also may be called the escrow holder. The escrow agent may be an attorney, a title company, a trust company, an escrow company, or the escrow department of a lending institution. Escrow closing procedure. When a transaction will close in escrow, the buyer and seller execute escrow instructions to the escrow agent after the sales contract is signed. One of the parties selects an escrow agent. Which party selects the agent is determined either by negotiation or by state law. Once the contract is signed, the broker turns over the earnest money to the escrow agent, who deposits it in a special trust, or escrow, account. Buyer and seller deposit all pertinent documents and other items with the escrow agent before the specified date of closing. The seller usually deposits the deed conveying the property to the buyer. Title evidence, abstract and attorney's opinion of title, certificate of title, title insurance. Existing hazard insurance policies. A letter or mortgage reduction certificate from the lender stating the exact principal remaining, if the buyer assumes the seller's loan. Affidavits of title, if required. A payoff statement, if the seller's loan is to be paid off. Bill of sale. Survey. Transfer tax declarations. Paid water bill, and other instruments or documents necessary to clear the title or to complete the transaction. The buyer deposits the balance of the cash needed to complete the purchase, usually in the form of a certified check. Loan documents, if the buyer secures a new loan. Proof of hazard insurance and flood insurance, if required, and other necessary documents, such as inspection reports required by the lender. The escrow agent has the authority to examine the title evidence. When marketable title is shown in the name of the buyer and all other conditions of the escrow agreement have been met, the agent is authorized to disburse the purchase price to the seller, minus all charges and expenses. The agent then records the deed and mortgage or deed of trust if a new loan has been obtained by the purchaser. If the escrow agent's examination of the title discloses liens, a portion of the purchase price can be withheld from the seller. The withheld portion is used to pay the liens to clear the title. If the seller cannot clear the title, or if for any reason the sale cannot be consummated, the escrow instructions usually provide that the parties be returned to their former statuses as if no sale occurred. The escrow agent reconveys title to the seller and returns the purchase money to the buyer. If the seller dies prior to the closing date, but after having given a signed deed to the escrow agent, the closing still may proceed, with the escrow agent transferring title to the buyer and turning the purchase price over to the seller's estate. IRS reporting requirements. Certain real estate closings must be reported to the Internal Revenue Service, IRS, on Form 1099 HES. The affected properties include sales or exchanges of land, improved or unimproved, including airspace, an inherently permanent structure, including any residential, commercial, or industrial building, a condominium unit and its appurtenant fixtures and common elements including land, shares in a cooperative housing corporation. Information to be reported includes the sales price, the amount of property tax reimbursement credited to the seller, the seller's social security number. If the closing agent does not notify the IRS, the responsibility for filing the form falls on the mortgage lender, although the real estate licensees or the parties to the transaction ultimately could be held liable. Licensee's role at face-to-face closings in Illinois, the licensee's role is limited to simply collecting the commission. A licensee's job is essentially finished as soon as the sales contract is signed. After the contract is signed, the attorneys take over. Even so, a licensee's service generally continues all the way through closing, because it is in the licensee's best interest that the transactions move successfully and smoothly to a conclusion. This may mean actively arranging for title evidence, surveys, appraisals, and inspections or repairs for structural conditions, water supplies, sewage facilities, or toxic substances. Real estate licensees usually attend the face-to-face closing. Often, the parties look to their agents for guidance, assistance, and information during what can be a stressful experience. Licensees should avoid recommending sources for any inspection or testing services. If a buyer suffers any injury as a result of a provider's negligence, the licensee might also be named in any lawsuit. The better practice is to give clients the names of several professionals who offer high-quality services. In addition, licensees who receive any compensation or reward from a source they recommend to a client must disclose such an arrangement to the client. Licensees must never receive compensation from an attorney or a lender. Lender's interest at closing. Whether a buyer obtains new financing or assumes the seller's existing loan, the lender wants to protect its security interest in the property. The lender has an interest in making sure the buyer gets good, marketable title and that tax and insurance payments are maintained. Lenders want their mortgage lien to have priority over other liens. They also want to ensure that insurance is kept up to date in case property is damaged or destroyed. As a result, the buyer must also provide a fire and hazard insurance policy, along with a receipt for the premium. At closing, effective as of the date of closing. A lender usually requests that a reserve account be established for tax and insurance payments so that these payments are maintained. Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, RESPA, the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, RESPA, is a federal consumer law that requires certain disclosures about the mortgage and settlement process and prohibits certain practices that increase the costs of settlement services, such as kickbacks and referral fees that can increase settlement costs for home buyers. RESPA regulations apply to first lien residential mortgage loans made to finance the purchases of 1-4 family homes, cooperatives, and condominiums for either investment or occupancy, as well as second or subordinate liens for home equity loans when a purchase is financed by a federally related mortgage loan. Federally related loans are those made by banks, savings and loan associations, or other lenders whose deposits are insured by federal agencies. Loans insured by the FHA and guaranteed by the Department of Veterans Affairs, VA, loans administered by HUD, and loans intended to be sold by the lenders to Fannie Mae, Ginnie Mae, or Freddie Mac. RESPA does not apply to the following settlements. Loans on large properties, i.e., more than 25 acres. Loans for business or agricultural purposes. Construction loans or other temporary financing. Loans for business or agricultural purposes. Construction loans or other temporary financing. Vacant land, unless a dwelling will be placed on the lot within 2 years. A transaction financed solely by a purchase money mortgage taken back by the seller. An installment contract, contract for deed. A buyer's assumption of a seller's existing loan, if the terms of the assumed loan are modified, or if the lender charges more than $50 for the assumption, the transaction is subject to RESPA regulations. RESPA prohibits certain practices that increase the cost of settlement services. Section 8 prohibits kickbacks and fee splitting for referrals of settlement services and unearned fees for services not actually performed. Violations are subject to criminal and civil penalties, including fines up to $10,000 and/or imprisonment for up to 1 year. Consumers may privately pursue a violator in court. The violator may be liable for an amount up to 3 times the amount of the charge paid for the service. Section 9 prohibits home sellers from requiring that homebuyers buy title insurance from a particular company. Buyers may sue the seller for such a violation. Violators are liable for up to 3 times the amount of all charges paid for the title insurance. Section 10 prohibits lenders from requiring excessive escrow account deposits, money set aside to pay taxes, hazard insurance, and other charges related to the property. In practice, although RESPA's requirements are aimed primarily at lenders, real estate licensees fall under RESPA when they refer buyers to particular lenders, title companies, attorneys, or other providers of settlement services. Licensees who offer computerized loan origination, CLO, are also subject to regulation. Remember that buyers have the right to select their own providers of settlement services. Affiliated business arrangement to streamline the settlement process, a real estate firm, title insurance company, mortgage broker, home inspection company, or even a moving company may agree to offer a package of services to consumers, a system known as an affiliated business arrangement, ABA. RESPA permits an ABA as long as a consumer is clearly informed of the relationship among the service providers, that participation is not required, that other providers are available, that the only thing of value received by one business entity from others, in addition to permitted payments for services provided, is a return on ownership interest or franchise relationship. Fees must be reasonably related to the value of the services provided and not be fees exchanged among the affiliated companies, simply for referring business to one another. This referral fee prohibition may be a particularly important issue for licensees who offer computerized loan origination, CLO, services to their clients and customers. CLOs that provide services to consumers may charge for the services provided. The fees must be disclosed on the HUD-1 or HUD-1 a settlement statement. While a borrower's ability to comparison shop for a loan may be enhanced by a CLO system, the range of choices must not be limited. Consumers must be informed of the availability and costs of other lenders. Disclosure requirements. Lenders and settlement agents have the following disclosure obligations at the time of loan application and loan closing or within 3 business days of receiving the loan application. If the lender denies the loan within 3 days, then RESPA does not require that the lender provide the following documents. Special Information Booklet. This HUD booklet, which must be given at the time of application or provided within 3 days of loan application, provides the borrower with general information about settlement, closing, costs. It also explains the various provisions of RESPA, including a line-by-line description of the Uniform Settlement Statement. Good Faith Estimate of Lending Cost Summary of Base Interest, Term, Down Payment, Loan Origination Fee, Points, Discount Points, Credit Report, and any other miscellaneous costs. Issuing a new GFE triggers a new 3-day waiting period, in which case, closing may not occur until after 3 days have passed. The GFE indicates which closing costs may or may not change prior to settlement and, if they do, by how much. The fees are divided into 3 categories. No tolerance, fees that may not increase before closing, O lender charges for taking, underwriting, and processing the loan application, O including points, O origination fees, and O yield spread premiums. 10% tolerance, fees that cannot increase by more than 10% in any given category. O settlement services for which the lender selects the provider or for which the borrower selects the provider from the lender's list. O title services and title insurance if the lender selects the provider, and recording fees. Unlimited tolerance, fees for services that are out of the lender's control. Services for which the borrower chooses the provider, O such as escrow charges, O title insurance fees, O impounds for taxes, mortgage interest, O the cost of homeowner's insurance mortgage servicing disclosure statement. This statement tells the borrower whether the lender intends to service the loan or to transfer it to another lender. It will also provide information about resolving complaints. The last page of the GFE is a worksheet that consumers can use to compare different loans and terms to aid in price shopping. The lender is responsible for the accuracy of the GFE and the actual costs that the lender charges on the HUD-1. Uniform Settlement Statement, HUD-1. RESPA requires that the Uniform Settlement Statement itemize all charges that are normally paid by a borrower and a seller in connection with settlement, whether required by the lender or another party, or paid by the lender or any other person. The third page of the HUD-1 form provides for a comparison of the original GFE estimates to the actual charges appearing on the HUD-1. Lenders are permitted to correct any violation of the tolerances by reimbursing the borrower within 30 days of settlement. Accounts for taxes and insurance. While RESPA does not require that escrow accounts be set up, certain government loan programs and some lenders require escrow accounts as a condition of the loan. RESPA places limits on the amounts that a lender may require. On a monthly basis, the lender may require only 1/12 of the total of the disbursements for the year, plus an amount necessary to cover a shortage in the account. No more than 1/6 of the year's total disbursements may be held as a cushion. A cushion is not required. Once a year, the lender must perform an escrow account analysis and return any amount over $50 to the borrower. By law, borrowers have the right to inspect a completed HUD-1 form to the extent that the figures are available, one business day before the closing. Sellers are not entitled to this privilege. Kickbacks and referral fees. RESPA prohibits the payment of kickbacks or unearned fees in any real estate settlement service. It prohibits referral fees when no services are actually rendered. The payment or receipt of a fee, kickback, or anything of value for referrals for settlement services includes activities such as mortgage loans, title searches, title insurance, attorney services, surveys, credit reports, and appraisals. TILA-RESPA Integrated Disclosure Rule, TRID, in 2010. Federal legislation known as the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, Dodd-Frank, created the TILA-RESPA Integrated Disclosure Rule as a consumer protection ruling that gives more transparency to the loan process. It does not apply to cash transactions. The TRID rule applies to most closed-end consumer credit transactions secured by real property. Credit extended to certain trusts for tax or estate planning purpose is not exempt from the TRID rule. However, some specific categories of loans are excluded from the rule. Specifically, the TRID rule does not apply to HELOCs, reverse mortgages, mortgages secured by a mobile home or by a dwelling that is not attached to real property. The rule also does not apply to loans made by a person or entity that makes five or fewer mortgages in a calendar year. Rule names. The formal title of the rule is the Integrated Mortgage Disclosures under the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, Regulation X, and the Truth in Lending Act, Regulation Z, 2013. Other references to this rule include CFPB Rule, TILA-RESPA Rule, Integrated Disclosures or Integrated Mortgage Disclosures, CDs or combined disclosures or combined mortgage disclosures transactions covered by TRID. Most loans secured by residential properties. Vacant lot loans. Construction loans for residential properties. Purchase and refinance of residential properties rule exceptions. Home equity lines of credit, HELOCs. Reverse mortgages. Mobile homes or dwellings not permanently attached to land. Creditors who provide five or fewer loans per year loan application procedure. In normal loan application procedures, the creditor, borrower, fills out worksheets provided by the lender to facilitate an analysis of the creditor's, borrower's, ability to qualify for a loan. However, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, wants creditors, borrowers, to know that these worksheets and forms are not an official loan estimate of loan costs. As a result, the CFPB wants lenders to insert a disclaimer on the top of the worksheets, etc., as follows. Your actual rate, payment, and cost could be higher. Get an official loan estimate before choosing a loan. Information needed to apply for a loan under the TILA rules. The rules require the lender to provide the loan estimate, costs, within 3 days after receiving all of the following information. 1. The consumer's, borrower's, name. 2. The consumer's, borrower's, income. 3. The consumer's, borrower's, social security number for obtaining a credit report are 4. The consumer's, borrower's, property address 5. The estimated value of the property being purchased by the consumer, borrower 6. The loan amount that is being requested by the consumer, borrower. Difference between the loan estimate and closing disclosure. In essence, the loan estimate is the initial estimate of the loan costs. The closing disclosure is the final estimate of the loan costs. Note, a business day means all calendar days except Sunday and certain federal holidays. Communication of the consummation and closing dates. The rules dictate that the consumer, borrower, receives the closing disclosure at least 3 business days before closing. The creditor, lender, can provide this disclosure in person and or receive a receipt of the delivery of the closing disclosure to the consumer, borrower. Where the closing disclosure is sent to the consumer, borrower, it is presumed to be received by the consumer, borrower, 3 business days after it has been sent. This applies to situations where the closing disclosure has been sent by either email or standard mail, USPS. In order to adhere to this 3-day rule, lenders may send the closing disclosure by standard mail, USPS, up to a week before consummation. Note, consummation and closing are not the same. Consummation is the date that the lender and borrower are obligated through the signing of the mortgage documents. Closing is the date of the transfer of title. The dates may be the same, but not always. Closing may occur any time after the consummation as long as any of the following does not occur. Changes to the APR of more than percent, 0.125%, changes to the loan product, or addition of a prepayment penalty. If a change does occur, a new closing disclosure is required and a new 3-day waiting period begins. Preparation of closing statements. A typical real estate transaction requires accounting for the expenses incurred by either party, generally on the HUD 1, a form required for any federally related closing. All expenses must be itemized to arrive at the exact amount of cash required from the buyer and the net proceeds to the seller. These include prorated items, those prepaid by the sellers for which they must be reimbursed, and expenses the seller has incurred, but for which the buyer will be charged. How the closing statement works. The completion of a closing statement involves an accounting of the party's debits and credits. A debit is an amount that a party owes and must pay at closing. A credit is an amount entered in a person's favor, an amount that has already been paid, an amount being reimbursed, or an amount the buyer promises to pay in the form of a loan. A debit is an amount to be paid by the buyer or seller. A credit is an amount payable to the buyer or seller. A similar procedure is followed to determine how much money the seller actually will receive. The seller's debits and credits are each totaled. The credits include the purchase price plus the buyer's share of any prorated items that the seller has prepaid. The seller's debits include expenses, the seller's share of prorated items to be paid later by the buyer, and the balance of any mortgage loan or other lien that the seller pays off. Finally, the total of the seller's debits is subtracted from the total credits to arrive at the amount the seller will receive. Broker's commission. The responsibility for paying the broker's commission will have been determined by previous agreement. If the broker is the agent for the seller normally is responsible for paying the commission. If an agency agreement exists between a broker and the buyer, or if two agents are involved, one for the seller and one for the buyer, the commission may be distributed as an expense between both parties or according to some other arrangement. Attorney's fees. If either of the party's attorneys will be paid from the closing proceeds, that party will be charged with the expense in the closing statement. This expense may include fees for the preparation or review of documents or for representing the parties at settlement. Recording expenses. The seller usually pays for recording charges, filing fees, necessary to clear all defects and furnish the purchaser with a marketable time. Items customarily charged to the seller include the recording of release deeds or satisfaction of mortgages, quitclaim deeds, affidavits, and satisfaction of mechanics liens. The buyer pays for recording charges that arise from the actual transfer of title. Usually, such items include recording the deed that conveys title to the purchaser and a mortgage or deed of trust executed by the buyer. Transfer tax. Most states require some form of transfer tax, conveyance fee, or tax stamps on real estate conveyances. In Illinois, state and county transfer taxes are usually paid by the seller in accordance with most sales contracts. Local ordinances usually establish which party is responsible for paying municipal transfer taxes. Title expenses. Responsibility for title expenses varies according to local custom. In most areas, the seller is required to furnish evidence of good title and pay for the title search. If the buyer's attorney inspects the evidence or if the buyer purchases a title insurance policy, the buyer is charged for the expense. Because the seller usually is required by the contract to furnish evidence of good title, the seller customarily pays for the owner's title insurance policy. The buyer customarily pays for the lender's policy, which ensures that the lender has a valid first lien. Loan fees. The discussion of loan fees becomes even more critical with the new good faith estimate form associated with the new HUD 1 form. For a new loan, the lender generally charges an origination fee and possibly discount points if the borrower wants a below market interest rate. These lender charges for taking, underwriting, and processing the loan application, including points and origination fees, may not increase prior to closing. If they do, the lender may elect to reissue a new GFE, thereby triggering a 3-day waiting period to closing to allow the buyer time to shop for a new loan or to correct the problem with a reimbursement within 30 days of closing. If the buyer assumes the seller's existing financing, the buyer may be required to pay an assumption fee. Also, under the terms of some mortgage loans, the seller may be required to pay a prepayment charge or penalty for paying off the mortgage loan before its due date. Tax reserves and insurance reserves, escrow or impound accounts. Most mortgage lenders require that borrowers provide reserve funds or escrow accounts to pay future real estate taxes and mortgage insurance premiums. A borrower starts the account at closing by depositing funds to cover at least the amount of unpaid real estate taxes from the date of lien to the end of the current month. The buyer receives a credit from the seller at closing for any unpaid taxes. Afterward, an amount equal to 1 month's portion of the estimated taxes and mortgage insurance, if applicable, is included in the borrower's monthly mortgage payment. The borrower is responsible for maintaining adequate fire or hazard insurance as a condition of the mortgage loan. Generally, the first year's premium is paid in full at closing. An amount equal to 1 month's premium is paid after that. The borrower's monthly loan payment includes the principal and interest on the loan, plus 1/12 of the estimated taxes and insurance, PITI. The taxes and insurance are held by the lender in the escrow or impound account until the bills are due. In practice, RESPA permits lenders to maintain a cushion equal to 1/6 of the total estimated amount of annual taxes and insurance. However, if state law or mortgage documents allow for a smaller cushion, the lesser amount prevails. Appraisal fees. The purchaser usually pays the appraisal fees. When the buyer obtains a mortgage, it is customary for the lender to require an appraisal, and the buyer bears the cost. If the fee is paid at the time of the loan application, it is reflected on the closing statement as already having been paid. Survey fees. The purchaser who obtains new mortgage financing customarily pays the survey fees. The sales contract may require the seller to furnish a survey. Lenders usually require a new spot survey. Most real estate contracts in Illinois require that the seller furnish a current survey to the buyer. As a result, the expense of preparing a survey usually is borne by the seller. Additional fees. An FHA borrower owes a lump sum for payment of the mortgage insurance premium, MIP, if it is not financed as part of the loan. A VA mortgager pays a funding fee directly to the VA at closing. If a conventional loan carries private mortgage insurance, the buyer prepays 1 year's insurance premium at closing. Accounting for expenses. Expenses paid out of the closing proceeds are debited only to the party making the payment. Occasionally, an expense item, such as an escrow fee, a settlement fee, or a transfer tax, may be shared by the buyer and the seller. In this case, each party is debited for its share of the expense. Prorations. Most closings involve the division of financial responsibility between the buyer and seller for such items as loan interest, taxes, rents, fuel, and utility bills. These allowances are called prorations. Prorations are necessary to ensure that expenses are divided fairly between the seller and the buyer. Accrued items such as water bills, Illinois real estate taxes, and interest on an assumed mortgage that is paid in arrears are expenses to be prorated that are owed by the seller, but later will be paid by the buyer. The seller, therefore, pays for these items by giving the buyer credits for them at closing. Prepaid items, such as fuel oil in a tank, are expenses to be prorated that have been prepaid by the seller but not fully used up. They are, therefore, credits to the seller. The arithmetic of prorating. Accurate prorating involves four considerations. Nature of the item being prorated. Whether it is an accrued item that requires the determination of an earned amount. Whether it is a prepaid item that requires the determination of an unearned amount, that is, a refund to the seller. What arithmetic processes must be used? Accrued items equals buyer credits. Prepaid items equals seller credits. Using this general principle, there are two methods of calculating prorations. The yearly charge is divided by a 360-day year, commonly called a statutory or banking year, or 12 months of 30 days each. The yearly charge is divided by 365, 366 in a leap year, to determine the daily charge. Then the actual number of days in the proration period is determined, and this number is multiplied by the daily charge. The statutory month variation is also acceptable in Illinois. In this method, the yearly charge is divided by 12 to determine a monthly amount. The monthly charge is then divided by the actual number of days in the month in which the closing occurs. This final number is the daily charge for that month. In Illinois, we use the following to calculate prorations. Standard year of 360 days. Standard month of 30 days. Accrued items. When the real estate tax is levied for the calendar year and is payable during that year or in the following year, the accrued portion is for the period from January 1st through and including the date of closing. If the current tax bill has not yet been issued, the parties must agree on an estimated amount based on the previous year's bill and any known changes in assessment or tax levy for the current year. Sample proration calculation. Assume a sale is to be closed on September 17th. Current real estate taxes of $1,200 are to be prorated. A 360-day year is used. The accrued period, then, is 8 months and 17 days. First, determine the prorated cost of the real estate tax per month and day. $1,200 12 equals monthly taxes of $100. 8x $100 equals $800. $100 30 equals daily taxes equals $3.33. 17x $3.33 equals $56.67. Total taxes owed for 8 months and 17 days. $800 plus $56.67 equals $856.67. This amount represents the seller's accrued earned tax. It will be a credit to the buyer and a debit to the seller on the closing statement. Prepaid items. A prepaid cost is usually associated with the seller. The seller has paid a cost, but some of the benefits of the cost will be enjoyed by the buyer. The buyer then has to pay the seller at closing for the buyer's portion of the cost attributed to the buyer's use. One example of a prepaid item is a water bill. Assume that the water is billed in advance by the city without using a meter. The 6 months billing is $60 for the period, ending October 31st. The sale is to be closed on August 3rd. Because the water bill is paid to October 31st, the prepaid time must be computed. Using a 30-day basis, the time period is the 27 days left in August plus 2 full months. Monthly water cost. $60 6 months equals $10 per month daily water cost. $10 30 days equals 33 cents per day. Buyer use of prepaid water cost 2 months and 27 days. Total cost attributed to buyer use 2 times 10 is equal to $20. 27x 33 cents equals $9. $20 plus $9 equals $29. This is a prepaid item. It is credited to the seller and debited to the buyer on the closing statement. General rules for prorating. The rules or customs governing the computation of prorations for the closing of a real estate sale vary greatly from state to state. The following are some general guidelines for preparing the closing statement. In Illinois, the seller owns the property on the day of closing, and prorations or apportionments usually are made to and including the day of closing. Mortgage interest, general real estate taxes, water taxes, insurance premiums, and similar expenses usually are computed by using 360 days in a year and 30 days in a month. Accrued general real estate taxes are prorated at the closing. When the amount of the current real estate tax cannot be determined definitely, the proration is usually based on the last obtainable tax bill. Special assessments for municipal improvements such as sewers, water mains, or streets usually are paid in annual installments over several years, with annual interest charged on the outstanding balance of future installments. The seller normally pays the current installment, and the buyer assumes all future installments. Rents are usually adjusted on the basis of the actual number of days in the month of closing. It is customary for the seller to receive the rents for the day of closing and to pay all expenses for that day. If any rents for the current month are uncollected when the sale is closed, the buyer often agrees by a separate letter to collect the rents if possible and remit the pro rata share to the seller. Security deposits made by tenants to cover the last month's rent of the lease or to cover the cost of repairing damage caused by the tenant generally are transferred by the seller to the buyer. Real estate taxes. In Illinois, real estate taxes are paid in arrears. The buyer must be credited for any taxes that still will be paid in the future for time in that's past, i.e., up until closing, when the seller occupied the property. If an unpaid installment based on last year has been billed, this specific amount is credited to the buyer and debited to the seller. The buyer must be credited with the current year's taxes to the time of dosing because those taxes will not be paid until next year, again by the buyer new owner. Consequently, the seller is debited accordingly, through the date of close, and a proration, and often a tax estimate based on last year's tax, is necessary for this latter figure. Mortgage loan interest. On almost every mortgage loan, the interest is paid in arrears, so the buyer and seller must understand that the mortgage payment due on June 1, for example, includes interest due for the month of May. Thus, the buyer who assumes a mortgage on May 31 and makes the June payment pays for the time the seller occupied the property, and should be credited with a month's interest. Closing statement. Computing the prorations and charges, the following list illustrates the various prorations and other amounts to be included in a settlement statement prepared by the closing agent at the title company or the lawyer for the buyer or seller. Closing date, June 15. Commission, 6%, 0.06. $230,000 sales price equals $13,800. Seller's mortgage interest, 7%, 0.07. $115,400 principal due after June 1st payment equals $8,078 interest per year. $8,078 360 days equals $22.44 interest per day. 15 days of accrued interest to be paid by the seller x $22.44 equals $336.60 interest owed by the seller. $115,400 plus $336.60 equals $115,736.60 payoff of seller's mortgage. Real estate taxes. Estimated at $3,450, $3,450 12 months, equals $287.50 per month. $287.50 30 days equals $9.58 per day. The earned period, from January 1 to and including June 15, 5 months, 15 days, $287. 50 by 5 months equals $1,437.50. $9.58 x 15 days equals $143.70. $1,437.50 plus $143.70 equals $1,581.20 seller owes buyer. Transfer tax, 50 cents per $500 of consideration, or fraction thereof. $230,000, $500 equals 460. 460 x 50 cents equals $230 transfer tax owed by seller. Buyer's tax reserve payment, $2,012.50 paid to separate account, 712 of the anticipated county real estate taxes of $3,450. Buyer's one-year hazard insurance payment, $3 per $1,000 of appraised value, $230,000 1,000x3 equals $690 paid in advance to insurance company. Buyer's first full payment, including July's interest due, 15 days x $22.44 equals $336.60. On August 1st, the seller's loan payoff is $115,736.60. The seller must pay an additional seller's fee of $25 to record the mortgage release, as well as $100 for a pest inspection and $200 for a survey, as negotiated between the parties. The Uniform Settlement Statement. The Uniform Settlement Statement, HUD 1, used for most residential closings, consists of three pages. Sections J and K on the first page are a summary of the borrower's and the seller's transactions. At the bottom of the first page, line 303 indicates the total amount of cash due from or to the borrower. Line 603 indicates the cash to or from the seller. The second page itemizes the settlement charges to be paid from the borrower's funds or from the seller's funds at settlement. A number of the costs to the buyer must correlate to the GFE that the buyer received within 3 business days of the loan application. All items in the borrower's column are added up and transferred to line 103 on the first page. All items in the seller's column are added up and transferred to line 502 on the first page. Home warranties. A home warranty is a service contract that covers the replacement or repair of important household appliances and home components that can break down over time. Home warranties can provide a new owner some peace of mind. There are limitations with these plans, and they usually require a copay or service call charge. There are limits as to the coverage, and homebuyers should thoroughly read the home warranty protection plan to understand exactly what is covered. New home construction warranties generally offer limited coverage on most components for the first and second year. Problems can occur when making a home safe from defects. Some home builders' warranties cover all major defects. There can be a cost to the homeowner. The homeowner can buy additional coverage from independent companies. Again, the homebuyer must fully understand the coverage the new home has.